Hello, everyone. It's wonderful to be with you a few days after Law & Order Organized Crime, the most anticipated new drama this season, premiered beyond our wildest expectations. We all knew that Law & Order fans were excited about seeing Elliot Stabler and Captain Benson reunited after all these years, but the reaction was, to be honest, overwhelming. Building on an incredible launch last week, the SVU crossover and Organized Crime premiere continue to attract audiences, with both episodes already reaching nearly 14 million viewers. These audiences watched across platforms, helping to make Organized Crime the biggest digital launch in NBC history. So to talk about the show, its great start, and what's ahead, I'm very pleased to introduce executive producer Dick Wolf, executive producer and showrunner Eileen Chaykin, and star Christopher Maloney.
Thank you, Lisa. We kindly ask that you not record or take photos during the session. We'll be sending out the audio recording following the panel. And if you'd like to ask a question, please use the raise your hand function. Once you're called on, you will be unmuted, and you may rejoin the queue for any follow-up questions. Neil Justin from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Chris, I wanted to ask you, I think Stabler is probably one of the most hot-headed of the characters in the Law & Order brand. What's the secret as an actor to playing hot-headed, playing anger without going over the top?
Well, I think that template was set right from the beginning, meaning I still remember very vividly Dick wrote the initial SVU pilot. Dick was the one who hired me. And I went to him and I said, he originally had Elliot Stabler with three kids. I said, I think he needs four. He's like, okay. And I saw this guy as a guy under pressure constantly. And I felt that, and this had a lot to do with after speaking with real SVU detectives about the pressures that they were under and the crimes that they witnessed. And I knew that me personally, Chris Maloney, would have a very difficult time downloading and processing what these real people and heroes do every day and the things that they see. So that's like kind of the genesis of his. So it's not like, oh, he's a hothead to be a hothead. I think it's his reaction to injustice. I think to him, injustice makes his head explode. And, you know, I think that's also now part of Elliot 2.0, hopefully his evolution towards having a clearer understanding of the world is unjust. And then now, how is it that you adapt yourself to realities that keep punching you in the face, literally and figuratively?
Rick Bentley from Nexstar Media, please go ahead.
Chris, I want to follow up on that real quickly. The tragic incident that started this all in motion, the death of your wife's, your mm-hmm. character's wife, has that ramped him up more? How do you feel like that's changed him? Is it for the better, for the worse, or could it get any worse?
Well, I think it's what I, that can be tagged along to the last question that I answered, which is, so you have a guy who's dealt with injustice always one step removed, which is it's a victim that it is my job to go and to attend to. Now it's how do you attend to your own wound? How do you attend to this own injustice? How do you carry on carrying that much grief? You know, I think that's, you know what I mean? I asked Dick, you know, can I have four kids? And then later it was five kids. How about, you know, and carry on through there with financial pressures and all these and family pressures. Now deal with your family being literally figuratively blown up. So how do you deal with that? You know, with faith wise and personally. So let's hope that Elliot has found better coping mechanisms, but is still very passionate.
Jay Bobbin from Grace Note, please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for doing this. I guess this is a Dick and Eileen question. I believe you had to shut down twice for COVID concerns. How has that affected your delivery as far as episodes go, and also the overall arc that you were planning to tell this season? Have you had to compact it at all?
We've been remarkably lucky with COVID. We are doing one less episode than the initial plan had been, but it hasn't affected the storytelling at all. But you open the door for a gratuitous statement here that, needless to say, I'm thrilled to have Chris back. It's been a wonderful collaborative relationship with Eileen on this pilot and the show. But the thing that and you never know if you're going to get an opening to talk about this, the thing that really excites me about the show, and I'm not speaking for Chris, but I think is exciting for him, is that this is the first Law and Order with literally completely different storytelling. That in a 24-episode season, which next week will be, you should think, or next year will be, you should think about the fact that it's going to be 3 8-episode arcs. And the first third of the season is The Godfather, the second third is American Gangster, and the last third is Scarface. And these villains are going to be really bad guys that gives Chris a constant source of energy, outrage, belief in justice, and a different way of pursuing criminals than we've had before. You could always say in things like this, what are you going to be doing this year? And on the mothership or on SVU, you could just go and tick off your fingers. No, we're doing this, 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 this. This is a very long, but not too long, period to really get inside both your protagonist and your antagonist's heads. And all you have to do is look at the casting in the first episode and realize, you know, this is not episodic casting. We're shooting for bigger game. And I think it's going to be endlessly interested. And the character, Chris, has evolved in subtle ways that are given a lot more than lip service this last week, this week. Just think of the challenge that this gentleman was the most pre-Miranda cop on television. And he has come back, and the adjustment to the new realities that Stabler represents, I'm very proud of. And this is, I'm almost afraid to say it. It's one of the real reasons I'm glad that Eileen is here, because she's not only an excellent writer, but she has managed to take a very tough character and make him more sympathetic last week than he's ever been. Who do you think? You ever think you'd see Stabler cry? Anyway, that's the commercial.
Paulette Cohn from Parade, please go ahead.
Thank you. Chris mentioned, you know, about literally blowing his family up with Kathy's death. Talk a little bit about what's going to happen on the personal side of his life, because it looks like that was setting it up for a lot of Stabler and son interaction. And are we going to spend time at home with him?
Absolutely. I really wanted to take it.
This is a show that will spend time with Stabler and his family and his life and his emotions. We tell stories, we tell procedural stories. The DNA of the Law and Order franchise of SVU very much in our show, but we probably will get to know Stabler in a way you've never gotten to know him.
Meredith Jacobs from TV Insider, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for doing this. So this is for Dick and Eileen. There have been crossovers with SVU in the first two episodes. Can you talk about finding the balance of doing that to keep the focus on organized crime?
Well, I certainly think the second episode, I'm going to turn this over to Eileen, but I certainly think the second episode is hardly SVU Redux. I mean, we're gonna, I would say the most accurate measure of how often there will be crossovers and of what depth are the Chicago shows. We're gonna do it whenever it gives both shows a different way to shine. And obviously, there's a portion of the audience that says, geez, this is frustrating. Why don't you just put them both in the same show again? It's, excuse me. It's not exciting. This to me is, is much more engaging. Are we?
I take Dick's lead on this because it's a thing that he so intuitively knows how to do. But it's, I mean, these two shows live in the same universe, in the same fictional but very grounded universe. And we never forget that those other characters and those other stories exist. And when we tell a story about Stabler in Benson's world or Benson in Stabler's world and things happen that affect their characters, we don't just forget about it. So it's both challenging and tantalizing from the point of view of story writing to make sure that you keep those things alive while the shows have their own identity, each of them.
Rick Porter from The Hollywood Reporter, go ahead.
Hi, this is, I guess, mostly for Eileen and Dick as well. Curious about the choice to use the dead wife as motivation trope at the opening of this show. And I know there was some pushback and some criticism of that aspect of the premiere. What do you achieve in it from a storytelling sense and by using that as his reason to rejoin this or to join this task force? And
I'm not sure I missed the first word in that. Which part of the teaser was, did I
to use the dead wife as,
oh, the dead wife. Look, I have to tell you, it's, you know, it's one of the most dramatic. I've been doing this for a long time. It's probably the most dramatic teaser I can remember on any show. I don't know what I didn't see anything that was critical of that storytelling. Look, you can't please all the people any of the time. It's not what we do. The only thing we can do is tell stories that, you know, if we're sitting there and it doesn't compel us, why are we going to think that it's going to compel an audience? when I, you know, I thought that was like, wow, what a re-intro.
And I would say it was not, when I joined this project, that was already a fait accompli. It was a premise that I was given to work with. And I said, wow, this is a great place to start. I was not in any way put off by it. I was immediately drawn in. When you tell a story like this, when you tell a story about a beloved character who's been gone for many years, you know, the first question you ask yourself is, why now? And that, as a storytelling catalyst, is one of the best why nows I could ever think of.
Bruce Miller from the Sioux City Journal, please go ahead.
Ooh. Chris, when you left, did you say someday I'll be back? Or did you say, nah, I'm done with that, I'm over with that? And then when you were gone, did you watch the shows and say, oh God, I should be in that? What was your kind of thinking about all of that?
My thinking was it time to go. So I went. And I don't tend to look back, so I didn't. And you know, my journey's been fantastic and very fulfilling. And I must admit, I have maybe watched 10 minutes. I'm not much of a TV watcher, so it wasn't anything personal. That's it. Those are the facts, Jack.
Simon Applebaum from Tomorrow Will Be Televised, please go ahead. All right, Bill Keveney from USA Today, please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Am I back on?
I don't know. Who is this?
It's Simon Applebaum from Tomorrow Will Be Televised.
Yes, so
okay, great. Dick, one of the hallmarks of your shows is ripped from the headlines. And it sounds like from what you said earlier that this show, Organized Crime, is going to have two levels of ripped from the headlines. The overriding arc of these 8 episodes, and the second is the individual episode. So I was wondering, between you and Eileen, what headlines are we going to see ripped as the show continues?
I've had the same answer for 31 years. Law and Order is fiction. That, you know, we take the headline, but not the body copy. And I hate to be evasive, but, you know, this show started off as a story that what we were going to be covering was organized crime, criminal enterprises that are ongoing, and there are headlines all every day in every major newspaper that have some reference point. And the thing that's fascinating about Wheatley to me is that he is the old mob and the new mob. And you know, there's plenty of vaccine right now. There wasn't last week. And I thought that the oldest mob activity that there is or was hijacking. And here was an opportunity to combine hijacking and COVID. You know, I don't know how to get it much more ripped from the headlines. But there will be others, you know, Eileen should really be answering this because she's the one inserting the flavor into the sauce. But I never even, you know, we never think consciously, okay, what's the headline in this show? It's life. It's what's going on. It's the zeitgeist. And it is, you know, when there was some discussion, gee, how are we going to handle COVID. I said, the show is going on in the spring. It's not going to be gone by then. And sure enough, it couldn't have felt more timely, but it is taking up a major share of Americans' thinking for the last year. So I can't say I was surprised that people found it interesting. But Eileen, what other headlines?
Well, what usually happens is, given the template that we're working on, we come up with a story. We think maybe it's ludicrous. We hope not. But we run with it. And then the next day, Chris sends me an article that he found. And the thing that we just made up in the writer's room has actually happened. So, we're taking our lead from what's going on in the world and imagining where it might be going. And usually it pans out. And sometimes we feel just the ungainly weight of responsibility for having imagined these things into existence.
Bill Kevany from USA Today, go ahead.
Thank you. This question could be for any of you, but probably a little more Dick and Eileen. A lot of police shows have made adjustments since the events of last year relating to matters like police behavior and brutality, racial justice. How much, I've seen it on SVU, how much will that enter into here? And how does Elliot as the protagonist, Dick said pre-Miranda cop, how much did that factor in how he has or hasn't changed over this decade? And how much will that affect him, since that could seem like it could be a point of conflict in some ways?
I will just, again, obviously, the people inside the company, the showrunners, the producers, we spend a lot of time talking about police behavior. I would put it to you that probably more time than any other non-law enforcement group of people in the country, because it's what we do every day. And I made a statement when everything erupted in the spring and early summer that somebody said, well, what are you doing to change? I said, we're doing what we always do, which is listen very carefully, read virtually everything written about this from both sides of the spectrum, from the far left to the far right. And what I said in the spring still holds. The shows will speak for themselves. That if you've been watching Chicago PD, the question is asked and answered. Of course we deal with what's going on, but it's never in a knee-jerk way. That Law and Order for years, that people say, well, there's no character in it. I said, oh, there's a lot of character. If you're a regular viewer, you know, surprisingly huge personal dossiers on all six of the regulars, but we don't dole it out with soup ladles. We dole it out with demitasse spoons, because that's the way life is. Nobody gets a job, walks in and says, here's my resume for the last 5 years. It's much more interesting that television shows exist on a very different time frame than movies or books. That a television, a movie exists for 110 minutes. An hour show to be considered successful, the old standard was 5 seasons. So a successful drama exists for 110 hours. And we cover a lot of ground in terms of A, trying to be current, and B, tell the truth in a sense that people don't get to hear it. And again, something that I've said, we've come very close, but the Paradigm episode of Law and Order or SVU has yet to be written, which is where all six of the regulars are on different sides of the same question. And as you hear the arguments or you hear them discussing it, every one of them is right. Because life is not black and white, it's shades of gray. And again, coming full circle back to Chris, and I'd like to know what he thinks, that I think he's becoming one of the most complex television stars in the history of the medium, because you don't know what he is going to do now. He's a little less predictable, but he sure knows how to play it. When he walked in to the interrogation room and rolled up his sleeve, I don't think that was in the script. It is an instinct that's like, I hate to say it, but peacocks, those tails are there for sexual display. It's literally, is this big enough? He takes off, he rolls up his sleeve. 80% of the audience, I am sure, thought he was going to punch the guy. That's pretty cool.
Wilson Morales from Black Film and TV, please go ahead.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Hi, Chris, how was it? You know, obviously we've seen videos and talks about you and the rest of the cast, main cast, reuniting. But how was it reuniting with the actors who play your kids? And will we see more of them in their background, what they've done for the last 10 years? We've seen Eli in the second episode, but we'll see the rest of the kids in future episodes.
Yeah, and I'll give Eileen the lion's share on this. But I will say, what was it like? My son Dickie was the only original from day one SVU. Some came on later and then some were brand new. So, there was getting, hi, you're my new daughter. Let's figure out our history. And it was very sweet and nice. And I think the biggest thing to try and overcome was, and it was very sweet, they made me feel like, the OG, right? The original gangster, because I've been playing and I've lived in this world for almost 20 years and or been part of it. And many of them were new to it. So we just had to get to know each other as people. And it was lovely. I think there's a lot of ground that's available to cover. But Eileen, what's in store?
Oh, we certainly will see more of them. Some more than others, but a big part of Stabler's life now, a big part of his story is that he's now a single father to a 14-year-old kid. Sorry. So, how he manages to balance that with being back in New York and back on the job is going to be in his story. And we did that great thing before we started working. We got the whole family together, all of the kids with Chris, and they talked about who they are and where they've been and what they've been doing and what they do now. And hopefully that will come alive in the show. That wasn't me that time.
Our last question will be from Ali Mach from People Magazine. Please go ahead.
Hi, this question is for Chris. Fans, of course, freaked out seeing Olivia and Elliot back together last week. How does it feel to have a positive fan reaction to your return for 10 years? And have you and Mariska talked about it since the episodes aired?
I'm sorry, have we talked about what?
Just the fan reaction to the episodes of you being back together on screen.
Oh my goodness gracious. I apologize. They're persistent. Mirshke and I have talked. And the conversation went something basically like this. Wow. Congratulations. Congratulations to you. Yeah, it was pretty overwhelming. I think she was expecting it more than I was. You know, because I think she's been in the Law and Order stew. She's been in that world continuously for the 20 years. I don't know. I was not prepared. And it's overwhelming and it's wonderful and it's very appreciated. And I think this time around, the pressure's off. I feel less pressure than I did when Dick first tasked me with being Elliot Stabler. So I'm a little freer to appreciate everything. It's a nice journey.
And that concludes our panel. Just a quick reminder that episode 2 will air tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on NBC. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today.
Thank you.